I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Friday, March 27th, 2020, and this is episode 61 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this is the last week that my podcast survey will be up. You can go to lpenelope.com/survey and fill out the survey. It only takes a few minutes and you can be entered to win an ARC of my newest book, Cry of Metal and Bone. So yeah, March of 2020, at the end of the month, the survey will go away for a year or so until I do it again. So please fill it out if you have not. Thank you so much. So it's been another tough week, another week of staying home, social distancing, not technically in quarantine because I don't think I've been ill, but not going anywhere, no place to go. I'm very fortunate in that I don't have children, so I do not have to homeschool and deal with all of that. My husband does go to work all the same days he usually goes to work. He has a couple days off a week, and then so he doesn't have an insane schedule like a lot of doctors do, so that's nice too. But, you know, even though he's not at the moment on the front lines, because Maryland is not terrible. I think we have like 400 cases. I was looking up the numbers. I should actually look up and get accurate numbers. So as of recording, Maryland has 580 cases. We've still only had 4 deaths, apparently. And so it's not as bad as it is other places. But yeah, it's still just, it is what it is. So, this week's best thing is Queen Sono on Netflix. I had to tell my brother and my mom about it because they hadn't heard about it. And I was like, you have to watch this show. It's short. It's 6 episodes. It's a South African spy thriller TV show featuring this badass female spy who kicks a lot of ass. And it was really fun. I really enjoyed it. I had seen the trailer. I thought it was a movie. I didn't realize it was a television show. And I really hope it gets a second season. So go out, watch it. Those of you who have lots of time on your hands and are looking for good TV shows. It is a view of Africa that I had never seen, especially of South Africa. Every other movie of South Africa that I've seen, it tends to take place in the townships and, you know, with Black characters in extreme poverty. And so this was really the first time I'd seen a picture of, you don't even see the townships barely, or I don't know, like you don't see those, that stereotypical view of them, I should say. There's Black people in South Africa living in regular houses, not even the ones with the walls around them, just like regular houses like my house. And it's weird to say that until I saw this show, I can't remember having really seen that portrayed, you know? So part of me knew that not everybody lives in a tin shack and has to walk a mile to get water, but that's what I'm used to seeing from South Africa. So they also go, I mean, in the show, they travel all around the continent. I don't know if they filmed all around the continent, but in the context of the show. And it's just, it's a good story. There's a lot of layers to it, maybe too many layers. I thought it was good acting. And it's also really cool because the Black characters, I mean, the majority of the characters are Black. They flow in and out of languages. Like, how do you decide one sentence is in English and the next sentence is in Zulu and the next sentence is in Setswana and the next sentence is in some other language? I watch everything with the subtitles, so they tell you what language they're speaking. And it's just like, or in the middle of a sentence, they'll just say a few Zulu words and then they'll keep speaking in English. And it's fascinating to me how that works because I speak English. I've taken, you know, 5 or 6 years of French, 4 years of Latin, 2 years of Spanish, a couple of years of sign language. I've dabbled, in other words. I don't speak anything else. And I can't imagine how it must be to think in so many languages and then just switch off like that. It's really fascinating. I mean, I love the idea of linguistics. If I could go back again and study something else, I would study linguistics. One of my favorite podcasts is John McWhorter's Lexicon Valley. Last time I was in New York for one of the festivals that I was at, I was seated at the signing table with the other authors there. And John McWhorter walks by and I go, oh, And I think it was Fenderson Clark who was next to me. He was like, what? And I was like, that's John McWhorter. And he looks and he's like, should I know who that is? Like, he was perplexed. I'm like, oh no, he's a linguist and he has this podcast. And I'm just like, he's like, okay. And he was like, do you want to go talk to him? And someone else was there. Who was it? Miriam Weinberg, one of the editors at Tor. She was like, do you want me to go get him for you? And I'm like, oh no, no, I don't want to talk to him. He was with his little daughter, so I didn't really want to bother him during family time. I think I have told the story. Anyway, Queen Sono on Netflix. Good show. Watch it. It's only 6 episodes. And hopefully, if enough people watch it, we'll get a second season. We also watched Self-Made on Netflix, which is the story of Madam C.J. Walker, starring Octavia Spencer and Tiffany Haddish, playing her daughter when they're only like 5 years apart in age. Which I'm glad they're working. I'm glad they're getting paychecks. Yeah, the show was a bit uneven. It was, I think it's worth watching though, even with some caveats. But I mean, I definitely want to support, you know, Black filmmakers and Casey Lemons, who I think she was this producer. There's a lot of producers on that show. But it's the story that it decided to tell was not only unevenly told, but so historically inaccurate that it's like a little mind-boggling. So you have Madam C.J. Walker, who, if you do not know, was touted as the first Black female self-made millionaire, when that's actually not even true. But, you know, she had a lot of swagger and she could manage her brand really well. So that's how we think of her. Black hair care product mogul, I guess. And in the show, her antagonist is played by Carmen Ejogo. So we have Madam C.J. Walker, who is brown skin. Carmen Ejogo playing, I can't remember the character's name, Addie Monroe. Because the real woman's name is Annie Malone. Her character was Addie Monroe. Or I possibly have some of those names mixed up. But who's light-skinned. She's biracial, light-skinned, long hair. And while, yes, colorism is definitely an issue and, you know, I'm sure that in dealing with Black hair, in real life, Madam C.J. Walker, I'm sure, dealt with colorism issues and all kinds of different issues. But the woman who the antagonist is based off of, it's hard to tell people's skin tone in black and white pictures. I read that she was also brown skin or dark skin. Her pictures make her look a little bit more light skin. Regardless of that, she was not the mulatto antagonist of the movie. And so putting this woman, who actually was actually a millionaire in real life when Madam C.J. Walker wasn't, and pitting her as the antagonist and making it a story that focused so much on colorism when the real struggles and the real things that she had to overcome in real life were, in my opinion, movie worthy, you know? I question that choice. And also when it didn't even make for that great of a rivalry on screen in terms of the drama of the story. It kind of left a bad taste in my mouth once I started really reading a little bit more and also reading the articles by Madam C.J. Walker's great-great-granddaughter, who wrote the book, which was optioned for the movie. She had things to say about the choices also. I mean, I know adaptations are tricky. And you have to do a lot of things. You have to condense characters and condense time and move things around. And all of that is fine. But when you're creating an antagonist where there was none, based on a real person who you're misrepresenting, I guess, the real woman doesn't have anyone to speak for her. She didn't have children. She doesn't have, as far as I know, any heirs who are speaking for her. Also, just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. In other good things, writing updates. This is not exactly a writing update, but it's in the vein. The Erzinger Chronicles got a nice mention in the Washington Post in an article comparing it to Princess Bride, which, I mean, not comparing it to, but in the same breath, sort of, as Princess Bride in terms of a fantasy with romantic elements that might be nice to read when you are in lockdown. So I appreciated that. That was really cool. And, you know, I'm seeing all of these posts and lists for things to do when you have all of this free time and people lamenting all of the free time that they have now. I do not have any free time. I am busier than ever. I guess A, it's being on deadline for a book that's due in a week and a half. B, it's work. And I guess everybody at home decided they need to look at their website this week or the past couple of weeks. And there was like a rush site that I built this week for someone who is collecting donations because they have a connect for some masks for emergency responders and healthcare professionals. And so they wanted to get that site up quickly. Just maintenance. It's just been wild. So yeah, I scroll through and I see lists of books to read, lists of movies to watch, lists of shows to binge watch. And I'm like, I still don't have time to do any of those things. I barely have time to do what I'm supposed to do. Writing update. The end is near. Maybe that'll be the title of the episode. So I did a couple more sprints this week with my friends on Google Hangouts, and that was very helpful because I'm still having trouble writing. And more so even than the physical action of sitting down to write. This week it was actually, okay, the mechanics of it. Like, I know what has to happen, but I don't know how to tell it, which is a different problem than what I usually have. In addition to just like having someone, like the accountability of meeting someone online and writing, I got a chance to talk it out and talk some of the problems out, which helps me too. And so I think I have figured it out. We'll see. I'm planning to fast draft a few scenes for the end today. And then I was hoping that it would be done. Of course, I'm always hoping, but it's not. So my first strategy was to return to the Stealing Hollywood book, which is by Alexandra Sokolov, and review her the elements of Act 3. And I just kind of wrote them down and was like, okay, do I have these things? See, it's a great list of, you know, common elements that are generally in the Act 3 of a story or a film. Some of them I had, some of them I didn't have. Some of them don't really relate to what I'm doing, but it was good just to look at them and to say, okay, these are things that the audience is going to be expecting because they have consumed stories before. Doing that somehow led to watching the end of It's a Wonderful Life because of the structure. I think the structure of that movie is different. And there's something in the book that talked about that Act 3. And I was like, oh, because my Act 3 is not completely typical. So I kind of wanted to watch all of The Lord of the Rings. A, because I want to avoid having 15 endings like that, like the last movie did. But B, I kind of get why they had to have 15 endings because there's a lot of story to wrap up. But I don't have the fortitude for that at the moment. I'll let Sherman get settled. The next thing I was thinking about was the emotion and what do I want readers to feel? You know, what do I want them to walk away feeling? Like as I watched the last 30 minutes of It's a Wonderful Life, I'm crying, you're crying. I mean, how many times have I seen It's a Wonderful Life? But like, yeah, it still gets to you. And so I was like, oh my goodness, how did they manipulate my emotions like this? And it's obviously a different genre and a different type of story than I'm telling, but the emotions right there are very clear and they came through very easily. So I really had to sit back and be like, how do I want people to feel at the end? I mean, I've been focusing on having them not feel angry and not wanting to throw the book across the room because I did something that, you know, incited that. I mean, that is an emotion. And if at the end of the day, that's all you get, that's something. It's better than nothing, but I'm not going for that. And also, I went back to the story grid and to the genres and the core emotions of the genres that I'm dealing with, because I do have these three storylines, three plus kind of, but three main storylines that are going to be focused heavily on in the end. And each of those are different genres, and each of those genres have different core emotions. My strategy is kind of just to input information and let it churn until I'm ready to output a fast draft. Another thing that I realized that was difficult is that because this series deals with so many real world issues, I can't solve them at the end, you know? Like there's racism, there's a refugee crisis, there's xenophobia, there's all kinds of things going on that at the end of the book, I can't fix. Even though there's magic, you know, like, that's not the right ending. But I still want a satisfying conclusion that leaves the reader feeling good and hopeful amidst all of these problems that are ongoing. And so finishing this up is really dredging up things inside of me. Like, what do I feel about these things? How hopeful am I? Am I hopeful at all? So that's just another layer of difficulty that I'm finding that I didn't expect. Also, writing this ending in this particular time, there are scenes that I'm rereading that I wrote months ago that I feel like nobody will believe that I did not write them as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. It's eerie to me. No spoilers, but there is a scene where there are these, you know, rich merchants and aristocrats who are angry because of an action that the government has taken to save lives that is costing them money, and they want it to end so they can continue making money. And I wrote this months ago. And, you know, now we're hearing that there are certain members of the Republican Party who are like, let everybody die so the economy can come back. And it's basically what I wrote like 3 months ago. Yeah, so on top of everything else, because I'm writing a story that is historical fantasy, but also very current and dealing with so many current things, when we're in the midst of a current thing that is very difficult, it is just an added layer of difficulty to finish writing it. You know, on we go. That's just the way it is. It's been a little easier to keep writing. I'm gaining some momentum. So each day that I get back to it, you know, it's a little easier to keep going, I found. It's still hard, but it's a little bit easier. I'm super grateful for all of the exercise videos. My climbing gym is doing like Facebook Live exercise classes, which is pretty cool. And I know there's just a lot of content out there now. There's, you know, musicians performing and actors and people. I just saw that a theater in London is streaming plays, and people are just coming together in really wonderful ways to try to help and to try to contribute something that will help others. And so that's really nice. And in trying to focus on the positives, I love to see that. So, wishing you health and safety and lack of boredom, ways to occupy your time, connections with people. I've got all kinds of virtual meetings set up with people over the next couple of days, checking in with friends and all over the country and all over the world. I'm going to talk to my friend Lynette in New Zealand tomorrow, and I'm super excited about that. So there's still lots of great things that, you know, to be thankful for, and trying to express gratitude as a way to lift myself out of the just icky miasma of worry and feeling bad about this whole situation. And I wish for you to do the same. So until I talk to you next week, stay home, stay safe. Happy reading. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and check out the video episodes on YouTube. I would really love a rating or review to support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.